We're about to have a conversation with Wycliffe Jean, who was here to speak in Baltimore about his new book. Wycliffe, welcome to the studio.
How are you?
Pleasure, man.
Pleasure.
Welcome. Have a seat. Let me grab your book so I know what I'm even saying. Here we go. And we can have a seat and move this over this way and grab your headphones. And some headphones and put this mic for you. Of course, you know how to use a mic. Yeah, you've been in front of a few.
Baltimore.
Baltimore, Wycliffe Jean is in the house. 410-319-8888 is the number. So you can join us here for this conversation. He is in Baltimore. He is, has his first book out. First, right?
Yeah, this one's my first, but you know.
I hear six more are coming?
Six more coming. You know I have a deep story I got to tell you about Baltimore.
All right, though. Go ahead.
You ever heard my song, Gone Till November?
Mm-hmm.
Now in the carnival, when you hear the song I'm talking about, you know, a cousin of mine that went to Baltimore that never made it back.
Well,
that's how I started the record. He got killed. Like when I talked about the song Gone Till November, and a lot of people, when they hear the song, it had like a double or triple meaning, and the song was like making runs. So it was the original. It was me having to give his girl a letter saying that he's gone to November. I had to trick her because he wasn't coming back, you dig? So Baltimore is a deep spot, deep, deep place, man.
It is that. It is that.
Yeah.
We have a lot of people want to say hello. Madison Smart Bell. He special say hello to
all right,
from
all
Madison.
Right.
All right.
Madison, suck up fit. What's up?
He's and to my wife, too, who speaks Creole. So she's listening in.
What's her name?
Her name is Valerie.
Valerie, comment ye? How long you been married to Valerie?
We've been married only a couple years. We've been together for 10, though.
She cook for you?
No, man, I do the cooking.
You do the cooking?
She don't cook? She don't cook.
But she's sweet, though, right?
Yes, she is.
Oh, you hooked, man. She threw that Haitian voodoo juju on you. You ain't going nowhere.
So this book, I mean, everybody talks about what they think this book is about, but this, let me talk about what is, people don't talk about.
Yeah.
You mind? I mean, because I'm sure that, you know, Lauryn Hill, we can talk about her all day and everybody talks about that, right?
This book on the Twitter is on fire right now, man.
But the other part of this book, there's some things that grab me about this book. Your father. Mm-hmm. You and your father.
Mm-hmm.
And the relationship you had. One of the saddest parts of the book to me was when he passed away. Mm-hmm. And you talked about you just had that much time that you two could heal together before he passed.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. With my papa, he, you know, it was the toughest part of the book for me because everybody else in the book is still alive. And, you know, if there's beef, we can resolve it, you know. But he's passed and... You know, sometimes I feel guilty, you know what I mean, in different ways. So my dad was a Nazarene minister. So
he broke from a tradition doing that, right?
Yeah, because his grandfather was a voodoo priest.
Right.
So he wasn't with all that. So he denounced my grandfather. He became a pastor, and he got a visa and got a chance to come to America from Haiti. And after his visa expired, he went underground and— somehow they brought my mama over, and then they had two kids in America, and then they came and got us back from Haiti. So, but my dad's whole plan was like we would be like these church kids, and we would, you know, he even bought us instruments like where we was like the church band. We was like the gospel version of like the Partridge Family or something in the church. You know what I'm saying? Like had to play I'll be a witness for Lord. Oh, Lord, I want to be, you know, so, so in his mind, he clearly had a plan. So when it was time for me and my brother to go to theology school, you know.
What was it, Gerzine? What was it?
Nazarene.
Nazarene, yeah. Nazarene College.
Because we're Nazarene. So you have like Nazarene, Church of Christ, Baptist. We're Nazarenes. And they looking for me. I ain't nowhere to be found. And because clearly, like, I just wanted to get more into music. And my dad... hip-hop music was considered devil music to him. So in the height of my career with the Fugees, he never showed up to any show. Every time he see me, like, when you come back to the church, boy, when you come back to the church. And I was like, yo, I soon come. And then I had a big show at Carnegie Hall where, like, I was the first rapper to ever play Carnegie Hall. The magnitude of what I'm talking about is the Philharmonic Orchestra. Orchestrated music, By the time I left Haiti when I was like 10, I already was a master at jazz when I was 16 years old. I studied upright bass first. And
in Haiti?
Here in the States.
In the States.
And it's crazy how quick I picked up on jazz, but I could, something about it, I understood it. I felt it. And so my dad was cool with all of that as long as it was not hip hop. And so now years later, I'm mad famous, do a big show at Carnegie Hall. And I have to trick him to get him to come. So I say, yo, dad, there's going to be like some big gospel concert. Philharmonic Orchestra going to be there. I'm going to be conducting. And he said, you sure? Church concert? I said, yeah, man, church concert. And that night, I mean, you could probably see it online. I had everybody there came to see me because I wanted everybody there that I worked with. So I had like Destiny Child. I had Stevie Wonder. I had Eric Clapton. I had Mary J. Blige. Charlotte Church, Clive Davis, Naomi Campbell, anyone you could think of. If you was not in that room that night, you wasn't in the industry. And I looked on the balcony, man, and I saw my father. So I just stopped everything. I didn't care who was that. I was like, yo, my dad was the biggest celebrity. I said, yo, stop this. I said, yo, my father is in the balcony. You know what I mean? And he died like shortly, I think, a year after that. But to me, that was the coolest moment because after that show, I was waiting for him to be like, okay, man, good work. You've done good work. You know what I mean? And my dad is just a dude that always talks in parables. Maybe that's where I get it from. I never had, like, these straight answers. But he was like, yo, you know when you made it is, you know, when you have black, white, yellow, everybody comes see you, and they don't see the color, they see the man. And that was his way of saying that you're going to be all right, you know? And I took it. It was cool.
So the relationship was intense. I mean, you still had relations with your mother who loved you. She was always kind of bringing you back in and telling you not to tell the truth about what you're doing to get you back in the church and just let your daddy think what he wants to think, right?
Yeah, definitely. Every time my papa kicked me out the church, because we live in a church house, you know what I'm saying? I slept, like, you know, in cars, you know what I'm saying? Like, all types of madness. And whenever I want to go back, because, you know what I mean, the streets can get crazy. So I'd be like, man, I got to get back to this church house. And I tell my mom who called me back, and she'd be like, okay, just act like, you know, like you had an epiphany and you know, and you being saved, come back real humble with your head down, make sure you're crying. And when he preaching, you know what I mean?
So you come, it's not quite in the book, a little bit of it in here, but I'm going to ask this question. You had your great-grandfather and your great-grandfather, and the traditions that came out of your family come from Haiti, the Vodou, and your father picked up the Nazarene. So what about Wycliffe? Well, where do you fit in the spiritual spectrum?
I mean, well, you know, like my father's brother's a Mason. And so I grew up with my grandfather, and I understand, you know. Then with my papa, I understand too, and with my uncle, I understand. I mean, I meet everybody in the center. Spirituality is where it's at for me, but I'm a follower of Christ, you know, of the Christ, and a follower of God, you know, and to some God, there's only one God though, and to an atheist who, you know, at times, you know, I'm great at debating with those that don't believe. Because I don't base the generalization of what I'm about to say on Sunday sermon verse, right? It has to be, you know, we could talk from a scientific point of view. And, you know, from atom, you know, has to come some form of an atom, you know what I mean? and there have to be someone who creates that.
So, folks, you might be shy. 410-319-8888. Wycliffe Jean is in the house. We'll take your calls. You can write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. I'll check on Facebook in a minute, see if you jumped on there. But you can join us here, 410-319-8888. Now, when the Fugees started, I mean, did you have any idea inside of you what was about to pop up? What was going to happen? You knew you had talent around you. You knew you had talent. You knew talent was all around you in this group. But any idea this was going to jump off the way it jumped off?
Nah, you never know that. Like anybody who makes it, you just have a drive and a will where you just want to do it. and that drive or that will, you know it's going to lead you somewhere, and you don't necessarily know where it's going to lead you, but it your insides just feel good. You feel like something's going to happen. You don't know what it is because you're putting in a crazy drive, you know? So if it's like 24 hours out of the day, you know, the Fugees was probably sleeping 30 seconds a day before they made it. And we was rapping, dancing, singing. And it was crazy because at that time, playing guitar, all of that was forbidden in hip-hop. You know, it wasn't even called hip-hop. It was called alternative. So they even would label you another name because it was just so different, you know what I mean? And we paid our dues, you know. The Booger Basement wasn't no joke. It was
Booger Basement in your parents' house. Wait, they're telling me we have to break. We'll come back to the Booger Basement.
Yeah.
And Lauryn Hill and more. So don't go away. We're here with Wycliffe Jean. Reverend Meredith, the first question up. We'll get to your calls when we come back. Got to take a short break. Don't go away. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. On our way back, I got to remind you, support for the Mark Steiner Show comes from the Maryland State Education Association, the Maryland Dream Act. Make sure kids are graduated from a Maryland high school and whose parents have paid taxes for at least 3 years can pay in-state tuition. On November 6th, voters get to determine if some of our Maryland students can seek a higher education. It's important to vote. More information about ballot question 4 can be found at educatingmarylandkids.org. And in the house is Wycliffe Jean.
Yes, sir.
410-319-8888. Let's go right to the phones. You mind?
I don't mind. Let's go to the phones.
Okay, here we go. Reverend Meredith, you're on the line.
Good evening, Mark.
How are you?
God. I'm well and blessed. I'm so happy to hear you, Wycliffe. Chaque fois, c'est bienvenue à Baltimore. Oh, man.
Merci
so
beaucoup.
I must say that I have seen your career from the beginning, a student at Morgan. Y'all always represented at Morgan State. Like three times I've seen you, like in the beginning when the first album, then when y'all came out with the second album, and just, oh my God, just how you just rock the set each time. And as a person of Caribbean descent, family from Panama, coming from Barbados and St. Lucia. I just so appreciated the fact that you was bringing this Caribbean flavor to Baltimore. And I wanted to ask you what your thought about how Caribbean flavor, Caribbean music has influenced not just American music in general, but Black American music, and how we can bridge certain divides that Black Americans and Caribbean Americans may have, whether they be real or fantasy, and really get this cultural melange going on. Thank you so much, brother, for coming to Baltimore.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, I mean, I think we got the cultural thing cracking now, you know what I mean? With that internet now, it's a worldwide thing. It's not, you know, it's like, think about it, you know, there could be a band that's like hot from Brazil and you could bring to the school, and kids will still appreciate it now. They'll know it's called samba, because or you could bring a band out of Trinidad, it's called soca. So you know, Jamaica, it's called reggae. It's crazy because now you can more learn. My daughter's 7 and she can hear rhythms or look at the internet and be like, oh, you know, this sounds like, you know, I test her. I'm like, yo, what is it? She's like, well, sounds like blues, Dad. I'm like, you know, this sound. I feel even with the food now, I feel like even the food is more accepted. Like, so people are actually trying more food, you know, the fusion of food. I feel like couples are even getting more sexier now. The babies are coming out. You know, when you hook up with the Caribbean people, you know, we going to make the babies look sexy. You know what I'm saying? The Caribbeans is that roco, pollo, toco, toco. You know what I mean? We got that ocean type blood, you know? I think there was a lot of clashes when I was coming up, more like with the Haitians versus the Jamaicans, a lot of the stereotypes. I think that whenever you coming from another country, you come to America, you always going to get that in the beginning. But I think this is where the hip-hop culture fits in, and that's why I love hip-hop so much, because it was the only culture that would embrace everything. It didn't matter where you came from. As long as you learn how to break dance, you learn how to do graffiti, you learn how to either rap or steal somebody else's rhyme and be biting, you know, you can always enter a cipher and just fit in.
Well, hip hop has like it's taken over everywhere. People are at the bottom struggling. Hip hop has taken over. You hear it in the Arab world among Palestinians. Mm-hmm. You can hear it in the middle of Nepal, wherever it is. I mean, it's everywhere.
Yes, that's the voice of the youth. You know, and the thing is, people be like, yo, you know, hip-hop is dead, you know, and, you know, hip-hop died and all of that. I mean, hip-hop just morphs, you know what I mean? It's sort of like, you know, you can have jazz, then you can have bebop, you can have. So when I want to see what hip-hop is now, I just look at my daughter. She's 7, and the other day, you know, she's bringing me on YouTube, you know, and I'm very, very straight with my daughter. She's 7. And one thing I learned about when you're raising a kid in this generation, you have to have limits. I mean, we Caribbean. Her mom's definitely tougher than me. But at the same time, you know the kid gonna go on a computer regardless. Or you get them an iPhone, they're gonna sneak on the iPhone. So it's better that you always, you know, you monitor them. I mean, she don't know that I got cameras all over the house and I can see what she's doing all the time. But, you know, when she get older, she know that. But, you know, she goes on YouTube and she calls me. She's like, Dad, come here. And she's like, I'm going to introduce you to the hottest rapper. And I'm like, okay, Angelina, put it on. And she puts on this kid, Matty Faye or something like that. And it's a little kid. And Matty Faye, apprentice, is Vanilla Ice. And, you know, the whole start of this thing don't sound good to me. And, you know, and then Matty Faye's a little kid and he goes, yeah, boy. And then my daughter looks at me and she goes, yeah, boy. And I'm like, yo, you know where Matty Faye got that thing from? He got it from some group called Public Enemy. And let me show you what Flavor Flav look like. And then, you know, I punch on. Now I go back to my era and I show her Flavor Flav with the clock. And then he's like, yeah, boy. And her eyes just lit up. Because she's like, wow, I didn't know somebody created that. And I think that's the thing about hip-hop. I think around the world now, everyone has adapted hip-hop to their own culture and their own swag.
So I guess we have to talk about Lauryn Hill a minute because it's in the book, right?
Yeah, let me tell you.
So
I wrote the book. So everything that's in the book, you know, you can, you know, we have to talk about. It's just that, you know, the book purpose is an immigrant story. And I understand why the chapter of the Fugees is so crucial because it was such a soundtrack to everyone's life. It caused a lot of controversy, you know, the score, the carnival, then the miseducation, lines being thrown here, there. Well, yo, what happened? It was a time girls hated me, you know. It's like, why Clef broke Lauryn Hill's heart? When I see that boy, I'm going to slap him in his head, you know what I mean? So because the fans go with you, they grow with you. And it was important just to put the Fuji story out there, story in the early 20s, you know. And it was important because someone's going to say it, right? So everyone's like, man, you pretty blunt and straight up forward in your book. Like, you don't even hesitate. They're like, man, if somebody was like, if somebody committed a murder, man, they didn't want to be around you because they would have been in your book. You would have got all of us locked up. I said, no, it's the era of the Fugees was important because it was a soundtrack to everybody's house. The CD was done with a love triangle, which I talked about at the time. So, you know, I had my wife, I had Lauryn, and there was a constant love triangle. And it was, you know, I always felt like I was, you know, King David, you know what I mean?
And, a lot of men think for King David for a minute.
Yeah, like, you know, heavily King David.
Right.
And see, the thing about it is when you understand how you moving, like in your 20s, you know how to adjust when you're 40. I had to be honest because you got some young players right now that's like young Wyclefs, and they're like 19, 20, and they're doing this. Like, it ain't. And it's like at the end of the day, if you're going to do a group, right, and you want success, you got to know the pros, you got to know the cons. Even though we look back and be like, yo, you see Tammy Terrell and Marvin Gaye, that won't ever happen to us. You know, you see a minister and just a woman in the church who the minister is just constantly praying for, that won't happen to us. Yo, I'm a businessman. She's a secretary. You see her every night before you leave. That'll never happen to us. All I did was I just put out a blunt story. In my situation, it was with me and Lauren, just to make you think for a second. At the end of the day, when you hear the score, you don't even know, like, half of the scores being done, there was, like, crying in the studio at times. There was, like, tears. There was, like, people getting boxed down in the studio. Yeah. It was crazy. But at the end of the day, you know, ready or not, here I come. Now that I escape sleep, well, you don't even know what tone that's coming from. It just do something to you, and it drives you a certain way because it was created with a passionate undertone, Rob. I call it like Romeo and Juliet bubbling under. Something's going to happen. You know what I mean?
So, part in the book where you and Lauren Hill and your wife were driving, your wife was the one who pulled you up and said, okay, this is it. It's this or it's me?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, so keep in mind, I'm Billy D. Williams, you feel me? 20, chilling, you know
what I'm
saying?
At 20, as we
say. Uh-huh. I'm like straight Billy D. Williams. I don't, like, you got to understand, I ain't had no beard. I look like young baby face, got the cut up, you know what I'm saying? Even though I'm still good looking. But
you're 49, not 20.
Yeah. Caribbean women are tough. Like, it comes sometime, they be like, all right, well, if I make a decision, no, I'll bring the other girl. Y'all tell me which one y'all love, me or the other girl. And what did I say in my book?
You know you went with your wife.
No. I didn't automatically do that at first because I still had to finish the score.
Yes, you did.
You know what I'm saying? So I was like, what do I do? Do I make a decision? Do I go with my wife or do I go to Lauren? Then come back to my wife. And because now it was based on, do I finish the album or do I just leave it and go with my wife? See, all of these stuff is parallel to, like, how this stuff was done. So now I have to make a decision. Do I finish the score? Or do I? And I went and I finished the score. And then I finished the score, came back with my wife, then still had Lauren. So now I was like, yo, life is good, you know. I can have my cake and eat it too. Things are going nice, lovely. So now, karma of the law, right? So law of karma. So now we touring with the Marleys, you feel me? And actually, I was performing last night with Steve Marley. Steve Marley's like my brother, you know what I'm saying? So we got Steve, we got Rohan, and you know, it's a tour. So things
are going. Rohan's on the tour too?
Everyone. So all the Marleys on the tour. You know, Bob got a lot of kids.
Yes.
So they all on the tour. We on the tour. So keep in mind, everybody's youthful. There's a vibe. And, you know, I'm not paying the attention that I was paying to Lauren. It's a rock star vibe. So, you know, at night, I'm doing what I'm doing. So it comes a time when the girl's like, hold up. You know, like, what the hell you think I am? Like, I'm just going to sit around here and just wait for, you know what I mean? So, you know, she catch a vibe. You feel what I'm saying? And later this vibe, whatever is caught, is it leads her to Jamaica. And then it leads her to getting pregnant. And now, after, now it comes back to me. You feel me? So now, when it comes back to me, I'm headed to, and this is all, I don't want anybody listening to this. Like, this is not why I cleft now. I got to take y'all. You know, I don't want to give y'all too much so y'all get the book.
Right.
But
just gonna give the law, flavor.
The law of karma, though, you feel what I'm saying to you? I clearly thought that first child was mine, you know what I'm saying? And she clearly thought that.
And that's what upset you.
Yeah, because right there, you feel me? Now, but keep in mind, so the law of karma, because there was an honesty and you wasn't straight up with everything, then when the law of karma comes back, it bites you in a vicious way because what you thought it was, it wasn't, versus you just being straight up saying, yo, this is what it is. And that was like betrayal, right? But then when I look back at it, at my age now, you know what I'm saying? Adolescent, immature, egotistical maniac, you feel what I'm saying? And this is what I would like all of the guys to avoid, you feel what I'm saying to you? These are characteristics that can, you know, unfortunately, you know, I got up out of it, I drew, you know, but at the end of the day, leaving a person scorned is not a cool thing because karma will come back and scorn you the same way.
It will do that to you in a minute. So you got to roll because they got to get to your bookstore, right? So one last thing.
The bookstore.
The bookstore. Before you go. The
bookstore. I mean, this is a book tour. Like, you know, dudes was like, yo, Clef, you going on tour. And keep in mind, like, I'm getting back from, like, Abu Dhabi, you know? So I'm like, ah, this is going to be crazy. Like, 10,000 people, 15. They're like, why, Clef? The book tour is a little different, okay? You'll be walking into stores. There'll be a couple of intellectuals, you know. You'll have a couple of Fuji fans, a couple, you know. But it's definitely cool because I get to chill, relax, and just talk. It's cool.
And by the way, before we get you out, let folks know, it's going to be at the Barnes & Noble Hopkins, which is 3330 St. Paul Street here in Baltimore in Charles Village, 7 to 9 p.m., just like 40 minutes from now or so. And it's Memoirs Purpose and Immigrant Story. You can be there. You can listen to this whole show till 7 o'clock and still get there in time to hang out.
Yeah, it's still early.
Still early.
I got time, yeah.
Very quick question, then you got, because you got to roll and let other guests come in.
No, as simple as I look, I'm a boss, just so you know. No, I'm kidding. That's my 20-year-old syndrome kicking in.
If you had been allowed to run for president of Haiti, what would you have done different? What would have been your platform? If you had really been allowed to run, and some people rumor that you may run next time, but if you had been allowed to run, how would you have run on what?
Well, the first thing is, in talking about the run, because I want the kids to understand, we have to talk about the components of what was the technicality that took me out of the race. So basically, in America, we have the Constitution, and we all know what the constitutions are. So in Haiti, when they tell y'all that they took me out based on a 5-year residency charge, what you would say, if I got a lawyer to contest, the first thing he would say is, how can you give Wyclef a 5-year residency charge when Wyclef at the time was a diplomat with a passport that had the ambassador title of ambassador at large? Then the lawyer would have said, as an ambassador at large, what is the title of an ambassador at large? The title is to promote your country outside of your country and to help bring investment back to your country. Then the lawyer would have said, well, even the current president that's there at the time in the parliament proved to me that they had physically stayed in the country for 5 years and have never left. So, first of all, I got bamboozled from the race. The reason I got bamboozled, I came in too strong. I land off a jet, you know what I'm saying? And I guess I'm not supposed to land out of a private jet or something. Bill Clinton's the only one who's supposed to land out of a jet. That's my man. But if Bill landing out of a jet in my country, why can't I land out of a jet in my country, right? But I noticed if I could do it different, I wouldn't have landed out of a jet because Bill Clinton was already the president of America and was no longer the president, and he was in Haiti under another title. What would I have done if I had won? Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to tell y'all my policies because the cynic said, you know, how smart is he? He can't run. He didn't study political science. But let me tell you what I do know. 80% of my population is living on less than $2 a day. Over 52% of my population is the youth generation.
Right.
They say that there's 12 million people in the country at times. But there's no, like, real detector to determine a math to say, you know, in the countryside we have this amount of people, here we have this amount of people. So at the same time, an earthquake hits. When an earthquake hits, corporate interest is coming in. The same way you saw in Iraq and Katrina and the tsunami. I ran based on a few things. One is that I wanted to see better policy in Haiti. I wanted to see a free duty zone. I wanted to see air and sea get strengthened. And the way that it's going to get strengthened is you got to have something to trade. If you're a country and you don't have nothing to trade, you can't talk to me. So what is Haiti's greatest asset if we talking real? It's human capital. You have basically more than half of the population, which is out of work. So if we could create a situation where the corporate interest is coming in. We said, whoa, 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 hold on. If we are going to, you know, if you're going to win this bid, you're going to put 40,000 people to work. You're going to win that bid, then you're going to have to put 10,000 people to work. That's the number one thing. The second thing is our soil, our agriculture. How did we go from exporting coffee, sugar, to all different parts of the world to basically going to export nothing? Now, how can that really be recreated? That means we would need independence. How do we get independence? That means that we would have to create agribanks. You see, remember, Israel was once a desert. You see what I'm saying? Now, you notice Israel used that format when it comes to the agriculture. And this is part of what helped rebuild the whole structure. And I feel that Haiti had and has a chance as it moves towards the future. We have a president right now who's been my friend for over 20 years, and I support him. At times, the cynics attack him. And he was governing. He is not President Barack Obama, but in these United States of America, we've seen it wasn't a bipartisan front for Obama. Everything that he wanted to do basically got shut down, and he had to fight for it. That's sort of like what the president of Haiti was going through at the time.
Now, Wyclef Jean, I wish we had more time so we could talk a great deal more about lots of things, but you got to get to the bookstore.
Oh, yeah, I got to get to the bookstore, baby.
And I want you to meet him there in less than half an hour. He'll be at the Barnes & Noble, Johns Hopkins, 7 to 9 p.m., 3330 St. Paul Street. That's right by St. Paul and 33rd Street. You can't miss it. It's right there on the corner. Plenty of parking. Check it out. He's talking about Purpose and the Immigrant Story, his book. And you're going to play an acoustic set, it says.
Oh, they bought a guitar for me, Jerry Blair?
We got it.
Okay,
right.
They got my guitar. So, yeah, that sounds
that
fun.
Sounds good.
Oh, now I feel like I'm on tour. I got a guitar. Oh, great. All right, I feel better now.
Wyclef Jean, thank you so much for stopping by, brother.
Good All right, man. Good
my
luck,
pleasure.
Man.
My pleasure.
All right, with
thank
your
you.
Haitian wife, man.
Which is close. So we'll be right back. Don't go away. We're going to turn into talk about Nina Simone and the tribute to her coming up here in Baltimore. Stay with us.